LA has the largest jail system in the country.
You got people that have been in jail just like one time in their life, can't get nothing because of whatever mistake they made.
I stole some ground turkey because I wanted to feed my family. We was hungry.
Off the Block, stories tracing the path from city block to cell block and back. Find it now at kcrw.com or subscribe on iTunes.
Hi, I'm Frances Anderton, and this is DNA. The famed Swiss firm of Herzog & de Meuron has been tapped to design a huge commercial project in the downtown arts district. Rem Koolhaas and his firm OMA are working on a big development in Santa Monica. What could this mean for the Southland?
It's like LA's finally growing up in terms of the developer class that's here. So I think that's the more interesting conversation, is why is it that finally we have clients who are willing to take a risk, not at the scale of a house or a small public building, but at the scale of a major scheme to take a risk on really good architecture.
That's architect and teacher Peter Zellner. In a moment, we're going to hear about new residential projects by two of Europe's most admired architecture firms, and we'll hear how they've entered the highly combustible debate surrounding density in LA. Before we get to that, though, let's hear about a more spiritual project that Rem Koolhaas is involved in. We're talking about the Wilshire Boulevard Temple between Harvard and Hobart Streets in what is now Koreatown. It was originally built under the supervision of Rabbi Edgar Magnin, known as the Rabbi to the Stars. DNA producer Avishai Artsy is here with more. Hello, Avishai.
Hi, Frances.
So tell us about Wilshire Boulevard Temple.
Well, Wilshire Boulevard Temple is one of the most significant buildings in LA Jewish history. It's listed on the Register of Historic Places. It was built in 1929 at a time when much of LA's Jewish population was centered in downtown in Boyle Heights. And Rabbi Edgar Magnin foresaw Jews moving west. If you drive by, you'll see this neo-Byzantine dome. And he tapped these Hollywood moguls to help pay for it. So Warner Brothers, Lemley, all these names that we now associate with the early days of Hollywood were the ones that helped pay for the synagogue. And you can tell, too, because, for instance, instead of having marble pillars, they have plaster pillars that are painted to look like marble.
So and, set design.
Yeah, it's the Hollywood set designers that made this. The very evocative mural that spans the whole inside of the sanctuary, painted by Hugo Ballin, that depicts 3,000 years of Jewish history, was paid for by Hollywood moguls. And there's no center aisle in the sanctuary because those are the best seats in the house. So just like a movie theater, there's no center aisle.
That's so interesting. So real strong sense of spectacle. Very well built, but still did need to be renovated over the years. One of its members is the Los Angeles architect Brenda Levin, and she's done some wonderful adaptive reuse work on that synagogue, as she has on many other buildings in Los Angeles. But when the Wilshire Boulevard Temple decided it needed to expand, it decided to look beyond LA and look for an international architect. Tell us that story.
Right. I mean, this was really going back to the mid-2000s. The temple was falling apart. You know, the Jewish community had really moved further westward. So it's sort of funny. It was built at a time when it was further west than most of the Jewish community. Now it's much further east than most of the Jewish community. But the senior rabbi, Steve Leder, took a bet that the Jewish community would move back east towards downtown and northeast LA. And he convinced the board and many wealthy patrons of the temple to pony up the money to renovate it with the work of Brenda Levin. Besides the renovations to the synagogue, they've also just added this year a new social services center, and they're offering free dental and vision care, and largely targeted towards the neighbors to the temple, which is the predominantly Korean and Latino community. Now they are adding an event center. And so they wanted to bring in a prominent architect. They started with 25 names, narrowed that down to 4 finalists. After a paid competition that was, by the way, sponsored by Eli Broad, they had people like Richard Koshalik, the former head of MoCA, Bob Harris, who used to be the dean at the USC School of Architecture, developer Bruce Karatz, helped pick the finalists. And they went with Rem Koolhaas and his firm OMA, Office for Metropolitan Architecture, headquartered in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. They've done projects all over the globe. One of their most famous ones is the CCTV building in Beijing, and on our coast, the Seattle Central Library. But he's known really as a man of ideas, a theorist, and an author, as well as an architect. Now, I met recently with Senior Rabbi Steve Leder, and I asked him, Why OMA, and also why the need for an event center?
So the first reason is we needed a large gathering place. The function of a synagogue was always threefold. It was a place of prayer, a place of study, and a place to gather. And we didn't have that third leg of the stool. That's the first reason. The second is that there's a need for gathering space for the churches up and down the street, for the many, many not-for-profits located in our neighborhood and downtown. And there's really no great, magnificent, inspiring space. Now we'll have it. Now, aesthetically, of course, Wilshire Boulevard will always be the main boulevard of Los Angeles. It's starting to become almost like that river in River Ride in Chicago through this sort of valley of great architecture. And I'm convinced that Wilshire Boulevard is exactly the same. We'll have LACMA is going to do an extraordinary new building. The Peterson just unveiled, you know, like it or not, a very interesting skin to an old building. This Rem Koolhaas building is almost precisely halfway between LACMA and downtown. So I think it's going to be that center tent pole that's just going to hold up that whole part of the city. And it is going to be a building that when people drive by, their jaws are going to drop. It's a very, very special kind of building.
How important was it to have an architect that was, you know, well-known, sort of a name-brand architect like Rem Koolhaas?
Name-brand wasn't as important as world-class. What I was committed to and did know from the beginning was that we could not build just an ordinary building next to the sanctuary. First of all, major donors aren't interested in funding ordinary things. And secondly, it would have been disrespectful, I think, to the level at which our ancestors arrived in creating the sanctuary. Now, that it turns out to be someone like Rem Koolhaas is really helpful. I don't think the lead donor would have donated $30 million for an ordinary building or an architect that she had no confidence in.
Who's the lead donor?
Her name is Audrey Ermes. Audrey's family, her husband's family, goes back generations. Her grandchildren, fourth generation Wilshire Boulevard Temple members. Audrey made the decision after I showed her the design, the initial design, that she was going to take one of her most cherished paintings, a Cy Twombly chalkboard painting, and sell it at auction and donate $30 million of the proceeds to name the Koolhaas building. The discussion I had with her was, let's consider taking a piece of private art that is going to end up in someone's living room above a couch, and let's turn it into a piece of public art that millions of people will drive by and appreciate, and tens, hundreds of thousands of people will get to experience. And she was all in. She said, let's do it.
Can you quickly summarize what the building will look like?
I can, in the most, you know, kind of broad stroke way. It is a trapezoidal shape. It leans away from the sanctuary, so it kind of leans away out of deference to the sanctuary. Almost everywhere you are in that building, you are visually referencing the great sanctuary building. Either you see the dome right in front of you, or you see the tripartite windows, stained glass windows. So the buildings talk to each other all the time, day and night. The skin of the building has lots of little windows. At night, I've seen a rendering of what it will look like illuminated at night. It looks like this glowing little jewel box. And of course, you know, it's going to have this 10,000 square foot rooftop garden with a little amphitheater for about 150 people in the middle of it. And the landscaping is going to be beautiful. Mia Lehrer is doing the landscaping, who's a, you know, LA rock star as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's not exactly the pyramid at the Louvre, but I'm hopeful it has the same effect in the sense of each one enhancing the other and making the other more interesting.
Jews have a long history of sort of shaping the built environment and the landscape of the city, and this is sort of one link in a long chain, right?
Well, it is, and in terms of this contemporary, the Koolhaas building, people say, oh, it's so ambitious. I said, you know, the Jewish community of Los Angeles and Jewish philanthropists in this city have been part of the driving force behind almost every great piece of architecture you can name. We do it for museums. We do it for universities. We do it for hospitals. Why can't we do it for ourselves? And to be honest, let's do this in the context of American Jewish life. Now, my knowledge of synagogue architecture in America is not encyclopedic, but it's pretty good. In my view, there hasn't been a great piece of synagogue architecture in America for 50 years. You know, we just stopped and started being utilitarian about it. And it's time. And we can do it, and we're going to do it.
That was Stephen Leader, senior rabbi of Wilshire Boulevard Temple. He was speaking with DNA producer Avishai Artsy. Now, apart from a Prada store in Beverly Hills, Rem Koolhaas and his firm OMA has not built in LA. It's had a series of near misses, though. It worked for a while on a project for Universal Studios. Then the firm won a competition to redesign LACMA. Now, its scheme that was never built recommended replacing four existing buildings with one single building. That idea underpins the current scheme by Swiss architect Peter Zumthor. OMA was also the runner-up to design the Broad Museum on Grand Avenue. Well, now the firm is suddenly very busy in LA. They're working with Mia Lehrer on the First and Broadway Park in downtown, and they're working on a commercial development in Santa Monica. We're going to hear more about that and the challenges it's facing in a moment. These projects are coming out of OMA's New York office, which is headed by Shohei Shigematsu. We met up with him at Wilshire Boulevard Temple, and he showed us a model of the proposed event center. As the rabbi implied, it is distinctly different from the 1929 synagogue, a kind of leaning box with walls and roof wrapped in the same material. It's open, with views between the floors of the building and out to the city. The design begs the question, will the buildings talk to each other, as the rabbi laid out, or will they speak a different language? Here's Shohei Shigematsu.
For me, the respecting existing building doesn't mean that you have to have exactly or similar appearance or similar materiality. It's really about the relationship and how the sequence of use is seamless.
Wilshire Boulevard Temple was built by men who were running Hollywood. Yeah. So there was a sense, I guess, of some level of showmanship. Were you asked for some level of showmanship in your building?
I think that was always expected because they invited very well-known architecture firms for the competition, and they were quite clear that they want some kind of cultural jewel here. But the showmanship for me is really about the performance, not about the form necessarily. The experience within the building often is our strength, and people tend to think that our strength is not on the kind of exterior, but here we were also very keen on providing some level of spectacular nature on the facade. So as you can see, it wraps the whole building, even the roof, and we're hoping that it creates an amazing kind of light that comes out of the building.
That's architect Shohei Shigematsu, who heads up OMA's New York office. I'm Frances Anderton, and you're listening to DNA. After this short break, we will continue our look at European architects at work in Los Angeles, and we'll ask if they're getting a warm welcome.
Subscribe to KCRW's Today's Top Tune download podcast to receive a free song of the day. Find Today's Top Tune on KCRW's iTunes page.
Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton, and we are talking about the blue-chip European architects who are being hired here. How does their vision for LA's future impact the region? Let's start by heading to downtown LA and the Arts District, specifically a site the size of 11 football fields containing two large warehouses at Alameda and 6th. Now, the actual street address is Wholesale Street. Nearby streets have names like Warehouse Street, Merchant Street, Produce Street, Industrial Street. These tell you where we are, but Dan Rosenfeld, a longtime developer, says the neighborhood is changing.
We're standing now in what's called the Arts District, which is a former industrial area developed by the railroads for business distribution and logistics on land that was once agricultural. One thing I think is certain, and that is that we can't turn back the clock to what it was in its industrial days, and we can't stop the clock. It's going to change. The Arts District has become now the focus of a great deal of interest because people are attracted to the creativity and the authenticity of these industrial buildings and the grittiness and the character of the materials and the durability that they express. So the challenge for us as a city, and this is really all of ours to think about, is where do we want to go?
So, in the heart of this changing cityscape, the Irvine-based developer SunCal has spent $130 million to buy the site and has plans being shared with the City of Los Angeles this week for a combination of office, live, work, and retail space. It's a massive project being called 6AM for its location along 6th Street between Alameda and Mill Streets. And they have tapped the Swiss architecture firm of Herzog & de Meuron to act as something they're calling design consultants. Dan Rosenfeld is working with SunCal on this project.
Sometimes a fresh set of eyes with an international perspective will see things that we can't see locally because perhaps we're too close or too familiar. So the opportunity to have one of the great architectural firms of the world look at our city and see it from a perspective that is unique to their vision, I think is what we should focus on here.
You may have seen or heard of some of Herzog & de Meuron's other projects. There's the astounding Bird's Nest Stadium designed with Chinese dissident artist Ai Weiwei for the 2008 Beijing Olympics. You may know of the Tate Modern in London in a converted power station. Or there's the De Young Museum in San Francisco or the Dominus Winery in Napa Valley with its walls made up of artfully placed rocks. They are coming to Los Angeles along with Rem Koolhaas and his firm OMA, as well as their Swiss countryman Peter Zumthor, who's the designer of the LACMA expansion. All three firms have won architecture's top honor, the Pritzker Prize, and the three have something else in common, says Peter Zellner. He's an architect and teacher based in Los Angeles.
Well, they're all European, and they're all of about the same generation. But, you know, they all kind of came of age at the beginning of a period which we now associate with star architecture, from about 1997 with the sort of opening of Bilbao, maybe until, I would say, the middle of the last economic crisis, architects who produced signature work were tapped to do significant projects globally. And of course, we can think about the late Zaha Hadid, Frank Gehry, Norman Foster, and obviously these three as participants in that economy.
That was Peter Zellner. And when he says signature works, what he means is designs with a distinct image or idea that takes them beyond mere functionality. However, sometimes these buildings by so-called star architects are criticized for not being functional enough. Anyway, when it came to thinking about 6AM, Pierre de Meuron and his partner Jacques Herzog took a long look at LA, and they came up with a design that has two parts. Lower-rise bars or fingers of multi-story dwellings raised on a concrete platform that they call a table. Under this, at street level, are shops, offices, and perhaps even a school. Then, on the west edge of the site, they've parked two 58-story residential towers. These they refer to as needles on account of their intended thinness. But not only do these towers raise questions about whether they will block sunset views for the residents on the so-called table to their east, but also about why the designers chose to have such an extreme jump in scale. Pierre de Meuron explains they reflect what he sees as the DNA of LA, that it's either low-rise or very high, not in between.
The high rise for us is important to make a difference between the low and the high, because I think this is a specificity of Los Angeles. It's either flat or it's either high. You don't have this somehow in between bulky buildings or volumes. You don't have that here. So rather do extremely low, and then you can go higher. But it's needle-like. It shows here something important is happening. So it's showing that here in the art district, I raise my finger and I say, here, that's something. This is a part of LA, like downtown does, like Korea City does, you know.
Could I say from a civic standpoint, having worked downtown for 40 years, that I believe one of the strengths of this concept is it has kept the buildings that are in the Arts District, that is from Alameda to the Los Angeles River, at a low scale that is consistent with the older buildings around it, and that the density and the height are concentrated on Alameda, which is the major thoroughfare, which is the outside edge of the Arts District. It is also the location of the light rail stop that's in Metro's long-range transportation plan, so it serves the transportation agenda well.
That was Dan Rosenfeld. The architect Pierre de Meuron also says this is a different vision from the LA of the 20th century. Here, people will be able to live, work and shop in the same place.
So that's what modernism told us, is to separate the functions, to have dwelling there and living there. And LA is somehow one of the best results of this modern thinking. And now in the 21st century, I think we have to think of other models that are not only car-centric. And to bring those activities together, to bring them on the street level, so people are on foot. You can have also happy encounters. You go to the cafe, you have your shopping and so, you go to school, your kids go to school. That's the different model from the spread-out concept of LA living.
If you look at the design renderings for this project, you will see a happy hive of people in a mini city that blends industrial chic with a kind of Mediterranean market feel. The project's also intended to mix income levels with luxury and more affordable housing. And if it's built and occupied as the concept suggests, it really could be extremely appealing. But some ask if SunCal will deliver. The company is a long-time developer of suburban master-planned communities. A few years ago, it did propose a tower in Century City designed by French star architect Jean Nouvel, but that fell apart in the 08 recession. Let's go back to Pierre de Meuron and Dan Rosenfeld.
So our goal and our passion and our fight we will go for is to make this as refined in terms of architectural quality as possible, which doesn't mean that it is expensive, you know. If we have good arguments, I think at the end, you know, it's not money, you know, that dictates. It's the argument what is good urbanistically, architecturally, what is good for the people who live, who will be there.
But money does play a role.
Yeah. I'm not naive. Money plays a role, but I think the good thing, what we can do, is to make the one who have the money to make the right thing.
Now, the one who have the money at present is SunCal. Dan, you represent SunCal. You know, are you confident that this is going to go ahead?
I think they are definitely to be complimented for trying to raise the bar in quality. We've had so many buildings built in this current boom now of multifamily residential that are essentially stucco boxes. They're wood frame buildings clad in stucco or metal panels or some other relatively inexpensive material, and they look the same. You can go through Hollywood or North Hollywood or all over the city. This project aspires to something much greater. In some sense, then, the answer to your question rests with the community and with the decision makers. And for our city, the question here, I believe, is do we have the courage to take the next step as a metropolis?
That's developer Dan Rosenfeld representing SunCal and architect Pierre de Meuron of the firm Herzog & de Meuron. Now the long approval process starts for their project, and they know they'll be heading into a gauntlet of questions because this proposal arrives at the very time Angelenos are fighting over the future of density and height. And it's a fight that has slowed a project in Santa Monica designed by Rem Koolhaas's firm OMA. That project, for developer Metropolitan Pacific Capital is a mix of hotel, office space and residential. It's located at 4th and Arizona in downtown Santa Monica. Now, some locals wanted a park there instead. So OMA deconstructed the building into several bars that scissor, making steps, each with an open space on the roof. Here's Shohei Sugimatsu, who helms the U.S. branch of OMA.
And that way, actually, you provide more public space than the site. So that means, you know, people are benefiting more. And what's interesting about this block is it's a super block that spans from one side to the other, of 4th to 5th. So it's a mega block. So we provided a lot of through circulation. And what's also interesting about it is that we managed to convince the client to have a cultural program, which is going to be the Children's Museum in the heart of the development.
This is an ingenious scheme, but its scale and height has upset many Santa Monicans. And it's one of four projects there that has galvanized activists to put a slow growth initiative known as Measure LV on the November ballot. Here's Rick Cole, Santa Monica City Manager.
Each of them is unique, but in combination, they really scared the pants off of Santa Monica residents as kind of a symbol of the Manhattanization of the city in the future. I think all of the projects that remain in the wings need to be rethought, and need to be rethought in terms of the context of what's going on around them.
So what does all this say about the place of thoughtful architecture in Los Angeles? Back to Peter Zellner.
If anything, I think it's good because it also indicates that in the case of the commercial project, there's a caliber of developer now who are willing to take a risk on architecture once and for all. And this has been the case in London, as it has been in Tokyo, as it has been in New York or Mexico City. It's like LA's finally growing up in terms of the developer class that's here. So I think that's the more interesting conversation, is why is it that finally we have clients who are willing to take a risk, not at the scale of a house or a small public building, but at the scale of a major scheme, to take a risk on really good architecture.
Conversely, just as the developers are starting to take those risks, one's seeing a bit of resistance on the part of some of the local voters. In Santa Monica, for example, it's the OMA project that's one of four that has fired up the slow growthers in Santa Monica that want to see that building that they've designed for Arizona and forth, they want to see it reined in. Is there a message that you're saying should be heard by local Angelenos as well?
Well, look, I mean, you know, I grew up in the city and I'm, in the 70s in the Valley, and I understand, you know, its pathetic scale. And it's great and quaint, but, you know, I've also lived in New York and in Europe and in Australia and other parts of the world, and it's time for us to grow up. I mean, you know, if we want to continue to pretend that we're some sort of, you know, suburban fantasy land where everybody gets their single family house for less than half of their salary, that's great. You know, that was the case in 1972 or 56 or 42 or whatever. But, you know, I think for communities to continue to pretend that the accelerated values that they have seen, specifically in places like Venice and Santa Monica and the West Side, which have benefited, you know, homeowners directly, isn't tied to all of the commercial amenities that have been, you know, brought in to Santa Monica. I mean, it's delusional. This city is growing, it's densifying, and either we solve these things well or we don't. And so I would think that in the case of the OMA project, we should be excited that we may get an environment that is of the caliber of something you might find in Europe. And why would that be a bad thing? I mean, you know, we've spent 50 years exporting shitty American suburban models to all over the world, like China and Europe, and these things are horrible. And now, finally, when we're getting models of densification that are cosmopolitan and sophisticated, we don't want them.
Hey, Peter, why don't you tell us what you really think? That was Peter Zellner, architect and faculty member at the Architecture School at USC. I'm Frances Anderton. That's it for today's DNA. Avishai Artsy is the show's producer. JC Swatek mixed this episode. Special thanks to Jason Groman and Stephanie Case. The segment about Wilshire Boulevard Temple was made possible with support from California Humanities. That's a partner of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you very much for listening. Stay tuned for The World, coming up next.